When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Podcast The Ride, the second gate. And we're here today, and I'm not gonna lie, we're a bunch of freaks today.
Right. Yeah, hey, call us the terrifying triad.
Yeah.
Mike, Scott, and Jason, my kind of guys.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of freaks ready to get the freak on behind a paywall.
Behind
that's
a paywall.
Devilishly greedy.
That voice is Scott Gardner. I'm Jason Sheridan. Mike Carlson,
hey,
also here.
Also
there he
doing
is.
A voice.
His trademark, hey.
Maniac Mike. Who's also like a DJ for a local radio station. But he's also in the, what was it? Terrible Triad. Whatever that.
Yeah, he's in the Terrible Triad.
Oh, yeah, let's go Terrible Triad, sure.
What did you say?
I said terrifying, but I think terrible
yeah.
is a nicer clip to it.
Because sinister and terrible.
Yeah. They those kind of match.
So, in case you don't know what we're doing, you didn't read the headline, we are talking today about just the David Letterman performance of the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark song, A Freak Like Me Needs Company, written by Bono and the Edge.
Yay.
Yeah.
I haven't been so excited about a topic maybe ever. I've been so excited to talk about this, and I think we're probably all in the same area with where this thing happened in 2011. But I think I know I watch it perhaps quarterly, perhaps every quarter since
then. Oh, for
then.
Sure. Yeah. And I can say without a doubt that Mike would have sent this to me pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
Like day after airing quickly, mm-hmm. he would have sent it to me and some other people mm-hmm. saying you gotta watch this.
Yeah. I felt very lucky because I watched this air live. I didn't tune in specifically to see it, but I happened to put it on right before it all went down. But it also made me crazy because I had no one to talk to about it. Like, I felt like I hallucinated it. I'm alone at night just staring at my TV on the couch and like, what the hell? And then it didn't really blow up immediately. But I remember I was working in the Funny or Die basement with a lot of fun weirdos you heard on
freaks.
This show. A lot of your favorite freaks from the world of podcast. Imagine a kooky basement where both Nick Weiger and Bugmane share cubicle space. But I like it was such a big hit in that basement. Like a week or so later, it took a little delay. Mm-hmm. We talked about it nonstop, and I think it spread a lot through sort of this little scene in comedy world. If I'm correct, I want to say our friend Eva Anderson wrote or was like largely responsible for the tribute to it on Comedy Bang Bang.
Yeah,
they did with Tom Lennon. They did kind of a quick little like he was the Phantom, but he transmogrified essentially into the Green Goblin for one song. So it's
the
like
hammy
it's a
Green Goblin, the hammiest Green Goblin, yeah. Far hammier than Willem Dafoe or. Who would it have been in the
Chris Cooper, I believe, was going to be the Green Goblin, but he died. They killed him off in the second round of Spider-Man movies.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting.
And
okay,
then
okay.
Dan DeHaan was the Green Goblin because it was his son, Harry.
Right.
That's, you know.
So, but the point is, all right, before we go.
We're watching this, by the way, on loop in the background. And
yeah.
The lizard just came in, and I totally forgot what is, like, the Kurt Connors like part of him looks like.
The lizard looks like that inflatable T-Rex costumes mm-hmm. that are like popular at Halloween, or like I saw a marching band have a bunch of them like recently in a YouTube yeah. clip. But this is years before those inflatable Halloween costumes yes. when it was
now
like,
they're everywhere. But they, when you see those costumes, know that they were pioneered by Broadway legend Julie Taymor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the thing about this. That's so crazy. Like it, the level that knowing the budget is stated in the performance. It's a $65 million circus tragedy.
Actually, more like 75. He says, because that is true. It ended up alluding to the cost of 75. And for those of you who aren't Broadway heads, the average cost of a musical on Broadway is 5 to 15 million.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the differential. Yeah. Oh my
I'm sure
God.
Things like. King Kong that is currently running or about to start running with the giant King Kong. I'm sure that cost a little more. Mm-hmm. But this is a notorious catastrophe in the history of Broadway.
Yeah, yeah. And so, if you haven't seen this performance, first of all, we should have it in the show notes, or you can just go to YouTube and I think the full, just type in Spider-Man, A Freak Like Me Needs Company, David Letterman, and you will find it.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about the full show Spider-Man Turn Up the Dark. We're talking about this wonderful performance mm-hmm. where the Green Goblin, due to some very lax security on the David Letterman show, the Green Goblin bursts into the Ed Sullivan Theater
yes.
and takes it over and engulfs it in his freaky.
And also, this should note, this is an exclusive version of this song. The original cast recording of this song is just the start of the song and the end of the song. He doesn't stop in the middle of the song in the Broadway play and introduce these characters, right?
Oh, no,
he does.
Oh, he does?
Oh, yes, he does, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen it for the soundtrack.
Yeah, there. I saw mm-hmm. the... I've seen it. I
cast
saw it on Broadway.
Oh, I forgot that you saw it.
I saw it.
You saw it like a month after this.
Is it that soon?
This aired in July 2011.
Oh, I
and
guess
we were
I did.
In New York together
yeah,
in
I guess
August
you're right.
2011.
Yeah, you're right.
And,
and I saw it alone. No one would go with me.
No one would go.
Richie went with me, my friend, and he all of a sudden bailed on me because I was like, I'm going to try at the last second to get Spider-Man tickets. And I did. I walked up to the box office right as I was going in there like, well, are $29 tickets that are a little like view obstructed? Is that okay? And I was like, of course. That's the perfect way to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went in alone. It was raining. I was soaking wet. And I enjoyed the whole thing so much. I was in the top part of the theater, right by where like Spider-Man would come down and swing.
He does get really up close to you. I've been
watching
footage.
They're way up in the third balcony, and he would jump and swing down.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, it does seem like they pulled off a legitimately amazing show at times, and that sets are amazing, and some costumes are amazing.
Yeah.
It's just something about the way it all added up on this Letterman performance. So here, watch the performance, certainly, but let's just play the tiniest taste of it before we talk for much longer. That's
yeah.
about all we. As long
that's
as you know
enough.
The general tenor, he broke into the Letterman show, and he is the scariest freak of all time.
Do you know why he says that at the start?
No,
because there was a break-in at the Ed Sullivan Theater not long before that.
What?
Some like crazy guy broke into the Ed Sullivan Theater, so he comes in and like. I'll tie it into theme parks, makes a topical joke. That's why he goes, this place is surprisingly easy to break into.
Whoa.
It was a reference to a real person that broke into the Ed Sullivan Theater.
No idea. Yeah. Wow. Well, I've learned something before he's even gotten in the door. This is great.
Yes,
well, the budget is a topical reference thing, too. Like, I think the one thing that's missing is that he didn't say, like, everyone be careful on this stairs. We don't need another injury. Like,
but the scariest villain of all is the workers' comp man.
Yeah. In total, 6 people were injured while working on Spider-Man. And at least one of them was injured twice. And, like, people get injured, come back, get injured again, and then leave.
Well, so this show, fraught with peril, extremely expensive, as the Goblin himself mentions, and giant story problems. It was, like, horribly reviewed by the New York Times and all the major Broadway press. And they shut the whole thing down. And in fact, this song, A Freak Like Me Needs Company, was part of the revamped version of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark 2.0. This is one of the big additions. So this is late in the game and an attempt at an enhancement of a troubled show.
Also, to contextualize it, this was the second Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark performance on David Letterman within 6 months.
Wow.
The first one was the song Rise Above, which did that get cut from the
No, it was like
a centerpiece, I think, of the show.
Okay. Well, Boy Falls from the Sky, you could say.
I think Boy Falls from the Sky is probably the best song.
I would say this is the best song. Think, by
on
a mile
some level, yes.
Okay, yeah. I
think Boy Falls from the
levels.
Sky is like sort of like By the Numbers U2, and this is at least something. This is something.
This, well, some of the other songs, like Boy Falls from the Sky, you can feel the Bono and Edge influence in it very strongly. This, there is such a disconnect between that Bono did
I disagree
it.
Completely with that. I think that Bono and the Edge, if you are into the U2 Pop Mart and Zooropa and Octung Baby eras, this is right in that wheelhouse. It's the, you're right that it's like the normal U2 Bono. That's not what this is.
But as a non-encyclopedic YouTube non-fan, I guess. I don't listen to them or not listen to them. I don't, whatever, either way. But I was not aware of that evil characters doing hijinks is part of the U2 mythology.
Yes,
in general.
We're talking, of course, about Bono's alter ego, Mr. McFisto. Who is a man with a white painted face and devil ears.
And a gold sparkly suit. And fancy shoes that he shows off. And he's not gruff like the Green Goblin. Uh-huh. He's kind of this lascivious.
He has so many
feels that he just has to whine.
But I think that is who, I think you could see Mr. McFisto leading the Sinister Six in this, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
He is very much in that, this is what he thinks super villains and heroes are. And I think it's evidenced if I was doing karaoke 2 nights ago, and this is unrelated to, I wasn't thinking of this when I was doing it, but I put on the song Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me, which is from Batman Forever, which is U2. And it's the first part of this song in my head. It's a little bit more U2 sounding, but it's very much in line with his like attitude about like characters. And really, when we get down to it, he's just treating these characters like they're weirdo art people from New York. That's who we're all just trying.
Not a bad guy. I'm a kook and I have kooky ideas.
The collection of people they assembled to make this, Julie Taymor, Bono, and the way they talked about it, like, all of them talked about it. It's like, well, it's like rock and Broadway and a circus and wrestling. And it is very much the way regular people think, like fancy rich people talk about art. But it's about Spider-Man. It's about the most like everyday working man superhero. Like,
well, and primarily to me, with all the buildup and all the expense and all the pretension and the level of like, Bono, Edge, Julie Taymor, all of them beyond just like, you know, revered professionals, that they are like gods to be in these fields. And then you see it
especially if you don't know nothing else about the show, and then you watch just this Letterman performance, you're like, how did all of them add up to Spider-Man Rocks at Universal Studio? Yep. It just is. It is so similar to the dumb show, which we reviewed many, many episodes ago. But like, there's no, this is, it's just broad, theme parky, bright colors, no texture, no nuance.
Yeah. And not a good, like, Pop by U2 is an album people don't like. I like half of Pop, and it's, the songs feel so much more sophisticated than this.
It's so, like, especially go on Spotify and listen to the recorded version of it. It is so tinny. It sounds like the fakest, flattest garage band hip hop.
Yes.
And Jason, you're talking about personnel of this thing. Let me add a couple more on to this list. The it was produced by, this track was produced by Steve Lillywhite. Produced all of
the classics.
The main, he's U2's primary producer. He produced all the Dave Matthews Band, like the big Dave Matthews Band albums and songs. He produced for Peter Gabriel, Psychedelic Furs, Rolling Stones, The Pogues, XTC's song Making Plans for Nigel, and A Freak Like Me Needs Company. He, but because he was not like a rap guy, and they wanted to bring kind of a street influence thing, they did there was additional drum programming by a guy named Shay Taylor. Shay Taylor produced Frank Ocean's Think About You, Beyonce's Love on Top,
great song,
and a lot of Neo records.
So they all had of these hit makers, all of these hit makers are here.
It
and
sounds like an, I could make a quality recording in an afternoon on GarageBand that sounded exactly the quality of the record, the like official cast recording of that song.
Yeah, it's so thin, so tinny. It's inexplicable to me. And then let me also build up the scene how I feel lucky the way I got to experience this thing. That before several commercial breaks, before the Green Goblin did his immortal burst into that Sullivan Theater doors, it was an entire Bono and Edge episode of David Letterman. They were on the couch and they told stories about, you know, all of the amazing humanitarian work that Bono does. And they talked about the tradition, you know, about Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tin Pan Alley and, you know, to partake in this tradition. And then
insufferable. God damn it. I'm getting mad.
I know. I know. And then they talk about their songwriting process. And they talk about building up the song that I do like, the song Stuck in a Moment, You Can't Get Out of And
yeah,
the
I
Edge
like
pulls out an acoustic guitar and they perform the stirring acoustic before the lights come down. It's this like wonderful acoustic, you know, U2 such a gigantic band, and seeing this like intimate performance, which they explain in a lengthy setup, that the song was written about the death of Michael Hutchence, the singer of INXS, a tragic, awful death. So all of this humanitarian work, the death of Michael Hutchence, Tin Pan Alley, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and then, all right, we'll be right back with the cast of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, and then,
The other thing, I mean, this, there's a lot of conflicting emotions, because I do like this, I think on the level, I'm sure you guys probably, there's a level you like it of like, look at this spectacle. What is this? This expensive monstrosity.
So
as a comics fan, I'm horrified.
No, I couldn't disagree with that more.
What do you mean?
No, this is nonsense. This is great, like 60s. It's not the quality
of
60s Batman.
60s Batman.
Nonsense.
How dare you?
But this is
like,
comics have so much trash associated with them. I'm just saying, like, this shouldn't make you that upset. There's so much great comics trash that you and I like.
I mean, I get my thing. I think is like, why does the Green Goblin? I like the Green Goblin outfit best of all. Everything else looks like weird walk around characters from a theme park, or like inflatable mini Macy's Day. But like, they have the money and they have the costuming know-how to make.
Here's my point. There's a version of like a much more serious Spider-Man musical where the Green Goblin comes out and he's wearing like, I don't know, maybe a little bit less of a goofy outfit, and he sings like a serious Green Goblin song. And I just, there's no way to pull that off. There's no way that's going to be good.
No, that would be bad in the other direction.
That's like, I think saying like Batman and Robin is a movie is bad, which it is bad, but it's great. Yeah. It's fantastic, but it's bad. Mm-hmm. This is bad, but it's fantastic.
Batman Forever is like closer to, if you're like flipping a coin, like a two-faced coin, the Batman Forever lands, I think, more on the side of good, bad, and Batman and Robin's like, all right.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Cool. I agree with that, but also it's fantastic in the way that this is fantastic because it's just so bad.
Just realizing a swarm, a man made of mutant bees just came out, and I just realized a bee fell off his suit as it jumped out.
Yes, one of the best things, and that you're hearing about the Julie Taymor level of detail and artistry, and then immediately a bee falls off of the bee man. First villain who comes out.
These are clearly inspired by like the heightened puppetry and costuming of the Lion King.
Sure.
But it just looks so bizarre. Like Hayes, Craven the Hunter looks so odd.
They look different. They look like they're in different universes too. All I'm saying is this is glorious trash.
Yes.
And I would much rather have glorious trash than like those amazing Spider-Man movies, those second round of Spider-Man movies that were very boring and flat.
A lot of the Steve Ditko designed original Sinister Six, there's a reason in the comics the costumes have changed very little since the 60s. And the stuff that's kind of a letdown, like the Spider-Man movies, it's always like, we got to put him in a trench coat. And then Spider-Man outfit has to have a lot of superhero outfits now always have a lot of bubble. Like, why do they all look like
scales?
Yeah. Yeah. It drives me nuts in superhero. Like, why didn't just give them latex or leather, I don't know, but
they don't slip by a pool.
I guess that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Folks, Michael here. Eating well is hard sometimes, but that's where Factor Meals comes in. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. They've got 35 different options to choose from each week. So what are you waiting for? Get started today. Get after your goals. I've been getting after my goals. I had some creamy Parmesan chicken. It was delicious. I made it and I felt smart for doing it. A great thing about Factor is that it's flexible for your schedule. You get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Head to factormeals.com/podcastride50 and use code podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code podcastride50 at factormeals.com/podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do it.
Let me say what I think is, I think absolutely the song itself is defendable. I think the costumes are mm-hmm. defendable. I think the Green Goblin costume and performance are dependable. But here I think is really where it tilts is that we should also maybe kind of go through this chronologically a little bit, but when the Green Goblin bursts in the door and it's green lit, there's a bunch of green smoke, it's going to loop back around here in a minute in the video we're watching. The backup dancers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
These people who lean really close to camera with their broad Broadway makeup and costumes. These guys, they're the original B-boys from hell. All right? Stay away from this crew. Like, there's like dyed green hair. Silver makeup smeared, like not carefully applied. They don't care about careful makeup application.
But he's wearing like a
splash in our face.
They're like dancers from the horny number in All That Jazz ran headfirst into the cast of Hackers. And then this came out.
Beautiful. Wow. Yeah.
That is a good way to put it. I was just going to say, he's a guy in flannel. They were like wearing flannel shirts and like cheap tank tops.
The women doing the scary faces, like making jazz hands and going, ha, uh-huh. That's and some of the costumes are just a green hat tilted to the side. Uh-huh. They don't care about traditional hat directions. I'll put my brim where I want. And then some of them are literally, some of these people are just a girl with a green scrunchie and kind of like a green and black workout outfit. And that makes her evil.
Yeah, it's
She's
weird.
Bad now.
It is. It makes everything feel cheap. That is the thing that makes it feel cheap. If they were all dressed like other like Green Goblin henchmen, which I don't believe henchmen, I don't believe he ever had those in the comics, right?
It's kind of like heavy. It's just kind of like goons.
Heavy goons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if there were like thugs, you know, in a way, yeah, that would be better. But yes, they look like they ran out of money and they were like, just go to the Rite Aid and see if there's some tank tops and hats on the shelf there.
Somehow. I think a lot of, again, I love this as a spectacle, but some of my resistance is coming from the fact that it's such a hodgepodge. It's not quite comics. It's not quite rock and roll. It's not quite even Broadway. I think
it's
that
theme
song,
parks.
It's theme parks. That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, that's all. That's
I
what
guess
it is.
That is, looking at it from that lens, it makes 100% sense.
Maybe it's like, okay, we think that Aladdin show that was at California Adventure for a long time, where the genie tells silly topical jokes. Mm-hmm. That is what it is. You know what you're getting when you go in there. I'll have fun. I'll laugh at it. It's silly, but let's have a good time. But if you found out that the score was written by Loudon Wainwright or Leonard Cohen or somebody, and that, like, you know, and that they're, you know, that it took them 8 years to land on, you know,
this
the genie making a slap chop joke. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's the balance of, if they let it just be purely, this is dumb and silly, but the fact that there's that Bono pretension makes you have to judge it more
carefully. And the Julie
carefully.
Taymor
the
pretension.
Taymor
yeah,
pretension.
Yeah. Even more so, yes.
It seems like Taymor's pretension outweighs Bono's pretension by like 20% is stupid, 200%.
She bailed, too.
She got fired.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she got out of there somehow.
She bailed when they made her bail.
yeah, and there's an interview where Bono says, she was there the whole time, and I think, we were in and out because we were on tour, and we'd come back, and we'd see obvious problems, and I think they were less obvious to her. And that's what this whole thing feels like. When you go to a super wide shot of all of the freaks grinding around and punching in the air, you're like, how did anyone with an outside perspective could have said, you just made Spider-Man rocks. Mm-hmm. You, all of this work and 7 years of effort and playwriting got you to this.
Yeah.
Some of the other people involved in this, a listener sent us that Glenn Berger, who co-wrote the book, which the book in a Broadway musical is what the script is called. He wrote a book about the musical called Song of Spider-Man, yeah. The inside story of the most controversial musical in Broadway
history.
Which
I believe I have Scott's copy of upstairs.
No, you gave it back to
me. Oh, I did.
But
okay,
I
good.
Brought it back here.
Oh, good. All right. Leave it here
and
then.
I will, yes. I brought bookmarks of relevant passages.
Have you read all of it?
I did read
all
of it.
Is it good?
I think Glenn Berger has a pretty slanted view of how it played out, and I think the book is entirely an effort to show that at every step he's like, see, I knew this was going to happen, and I was right.
Well, this
I
was
tried
like
to make this better,
first,
but they wouldn't let me.
First, like, big gig, right? Like, he's written kids' cartoon. Was this, like, his
I'm
first?
I'm not sure. Let's read his author bio. Well, he wrote the play Underneath the Lintel and Oh Lovely Glowworm. And yes, he wrote for Arthur on PBS. And then the most damning thing in the author bio, Glenn spent 6 years co-writing the script of Spider-Man.
Mm. Wow.
Turn off the dark. 6 years of your life goes
the
to that.
The guy brought in in the last few months to help fix it is Roberto, I'm going to massacre this last name, Aguirre Sacasa, who now... is the person who makes the most sense working on this musical. He had written a bunch of Marvel comics. He was also a playwright, and he wrote on Big Love and Looking, and he wrote the script for the recent Carrie remake. He is the current chief creative officer for Archie Comics and executive producer of Riverdale and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Whoa.
Like, he oversees those things.
This lineup is so stacked. The credits of this group are bonkers, and not to mention the man who plays
the Green Goblin, Patrick Page, who's a Broadway luminary. I don't have the list offhand, but I believe he essentially ended up in this because I think he was the Grinch on Broadway. And it's a similar
He's role. Green.
Yeah, he's a green
Was he
villain.
Scar, or am I mixing my thing
Oh,
up?
I think he was maybe Scar.
I think he was Scar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think a very well-respected actor.
Yeah.
I have no complaints
he's
about
good.
It. I think he's fun as
yeah,
well.
He's great.
And he's having fun.
He, I think I saw him, I'm sure I probably did. He did topical jokes also during the show.
Man, what did he do?
A shake weight joke.
Yes.
Yes.
He was like, had picked up some like device and he was like, oh, it's like a shake weight or something, and big laugh. And then the show had to stop too because a Spider-Man got tangled up in a wire.
The one you went to?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It wasn't, nobody fell and broke their leg. It's just like a guy like flew from the balcony, swung onto the stage and then got caught on the side. And then like there was a pause and then it was like, Spider-Man will resume in 5 minutes.
Like a theme park.
Yes. And wow. Then when Green Goblin has a thing where he's like at a piano for some reason. So he's like playing like, we'll have to stop the show if something goes wrong. Like he was ad-libbing.
Whoa.
So it was so full theme park.
He would cover if shit happened?
Yeah. So he was
great. At
that
point, after that many concussions and leg injury, like they were probably had, a million alternative plans in place. I mean, I got to say, the interesting thing to me, like all the bad reviews and stuff were because as soon as preview started, all the critics rush to see it, which is an unusual thing. And usually previews are a way to smooth out issues with like scenes and stuff. And it's not going to be the same show as when it officially opens. This was such a catastrophe. The critics were like, well, we got to see this immediately.
Or we're desperate. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just a side note. I was thinking about how much I would love to play the Green Goblin.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I mean, this guy's given 110%. That's the funniest thing to me is how he comes in like a stadium is screaming his name. He is coming in hot. He's coming in ready to go.
I think, though, he's giving it. He's so confident. He's not giving it 100%. He's giving it 75%, but he's so confident. There's a couple dance steps he does that are like very late. He's an older. I think he's like in his 50s or something. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's not a great. But he does a couple dance steps later on. Maybe I should zoom it where he does kind of like he's in step, but you can tell he's like not a dance. Answer,
yeah,
and maybe not trying very hard.
Looks like kind of this slow little stomp,
like I can't, I'm not even trying to put him down. I think it was the right choice to not like go. Let me see where it is here.
The other everybody else is hoofing it more than him.
Everyone's
sure.
going
for
nuts
sure.
And he is just holding the attention of the audience.
The little point he just did, what we just saw where he like points three times, I saw footage of Julie Taymor
with
a glove
on. Here we go.
Oh yes, that stomp backwards. kick.
I'm sure he doesn't have as much mobility as the people in workout wear around.
I'm just saying he's in time, but he's not like he's not given the Springsteen effort in the fourth encore is what I'm saying.
Well, that's my favorite. I think in that part they're singing the light line and all the freaks, and they all kind of go up like that, and they all like swoop with their hands like zombies. It's just the most, that's really these backup dancers being scary. That is truly where it gets silly and loses me. But I was saying that point, I saw Julie Taymor coaching him in how to point. She has a glove on and she's like, make sure you're like, that's footage you can watch in a 60 minutes piece.
Wow.
So here, now that we've looped back around, let's say what's happening. The Green Goblin breaks in from the back, topical joke, walks in, struts into the Ed Sullivan Theater, owns it, and he's already planted a gang of freaky freaks in trench coats, and then he joins them.
And lab coats.
There's scientist people too. And then over here on the right, you've got like a guy in front of a laptop who looks like a modern Geddy Lee crossed with the Crow, who's like leading the band. And that's another funny thing about this, that this is being played live by the David Letterman band with Paul Schaefer. Let's add another luminary to this list.
Yeah.
And the part where
the Green Goblin walks up to Paul Schaefer and sings next to him. That's truly one of the highlights. Also, what we're looking at right now, where he sticks his tongue out, and it's like
the
Gene
tongue's
Simmons,
green,
and
yeah.
the tongue is green. Do you think that he had to like eat a green sucker right every, before 100%, he went out?
100%.
A green apple sucker?
Did he do it every night? Is the question on Broadway? Did they need it to be green, even though for the people in the front row?
Michael, I have a question: is Norman Osborn in this musical?
Yes, he is.
Is it the same actor playing Norman Osborn?
I believe so.
Really? They got that costume on.
I think.
They did a costume. Wow.
That's my memory of it. Because every other villain has just basically name checked in this, and they're just like dispatched easily. Mm-hmm. But he's in it.
Yeah, they're not really. I had a feeling
or dispatched.
He was the only one really fleshed out.
So let's just. All right. Lyrics. I mean, I know this thing by heart, but
yeah, sure.
We already covered it, but I just love. It's similar to like, I don't know, like how hard I laughed at the first line of The Room the first time I saw it. You're just like so, like, hi, babe, you're so in. And that, like, if there's any question of, like, is this thing silly or good or bad, or that when he, the way he phrases it, if you're looking for that, he's got his learning, he's gonna have commit. That's, it just tunes you perfectly. And then the reference to how expensive it is, and then he explains that he's the new Coney Island and all the rides are open and free.
Uh-huh.
And I also like what he says of a me. Like he's such a freak that all he needs to say is a me, and you know that's the craziest thing you could be.
So if you were reading into this and you didn't know what the context was, he's like looking to have sex tonight, right? Like if you didn't know,
I don't know. Yeah, I think your body meter's going off again.
Maybe but he's like he needs company. A freak like me needs company.
Well, here's a little story from the making of the show, that when this title was first presented as apparently Bono's working on a new song. It's called A Freak Like Me Needs Company. And the director said, no. It needs to be A Freak Like Me Needs Family, because his view of the song is that he's a guy, he's a loner, and now he's going to form his own family by giving people poisons and chemicals. And now he's got this family of freaks. So there, I think this is a little bit of contention. Maybe in some people's mind it is about sex, but in other people's mind it's about family.
Well, and this is interesting because in the original, the Sinister Six, who first appeared in 1964's Amazing Spider-Man Annual Number 1, which I looked up, the way they come together is Doc Ock breaks out of prison and contacts everyone who has been beaten by Spider-Man. And the ones who show up and get back to him decide they want to fight Spider-Man because they've all been humiliated by him. They've all been defeated by him. But they can't get their act together to work together. So they fight Spider-Man one at a time in a gauntlet. And sure enough, he dispatches all of them. And they're humiliated once again. And because it's Steve Ditko still drawing it, they're all very gross and ugly looking.
Okay. Wow. So Sinister Six, like hallmark of Spider-Man for many years.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of different members over the years, including in this one, Swiss Miss, a character created for the musical. She's a woman made of knives. And they bragged about, I remember the media coverage at the time was like, there's a villain created just for the musical, and she's called Swiss Miss. And it's like, uh-oh.
And what she does is strut up, wave her knife arms twice, and then go return to the back.
Yeah.
Yep, and that's it.
Yep, the end.
The lyrics, though, like, I've been told that what you're supposed to do when you're writing a musical is that the character is supposed to be somewhere different by the end of the song. Mm-hmm. Character starts in a certain place. You're supposed to make, like, an actual, like, something happen in the narrative in the song. That's what the song is for. So the first verse is like he's looking for company. Then he explains in the chorus that weirdos are there. And then he has a crew in the second verse. So I guess he's looking for the people. Maybe he means sex is company. Maybe he just means literal company.
Well, maybe this is a good time to play the extra verse that's not in the Letterman performance. I don't have to play the whole thing, but just a little. It's really all about the first line of verse two.
I think I'm looking at it.
I am also looking at it.
Satan's by my side.
Uh-huh, that's what I was looking at.
I got a crew of body animal mutants.
And the rest of the verse just really lays on. It truly becomes like a crew of freaks, because I'm a freak.
Demon hairdo evil dressers who just won't be denied is the next line of that.
Yeah.
And I have another thing to say about what I think contributes to kicking this to the lamer side. Okay, imagine Bono's guide vocals, where potentially he sings this the backup vocals like me needs company. And that's one way to sing it. But the way the singers do it is a freak like me needs company. It's that super Broadway.
Yeah.
You really hit each and it's three syllables. Ba, ba, ba. You got that? Ba, ba, ba. It's very much like Bob Balaban, the music director in Waiting for Guffman, explaining like, and half of you will say Blay and the other half of you will say Blaine, like these bizarre pronunciation rituals. Yeah. You just feel that lame Broadway, and no matter who wrote the song, as long as it's a big Broadway chorus doing it, it's just gonna come off silly.
Yeah. There would be, I first of all, I would think that the holy grail is to find the Bono and Edge demo of this.
Oh, if anyone for some reason. Because he did like temp this.
Yeah.
He was like messing around in the studio with a loop and improvising lyrics. And this is a passage in the book. If you don't mind me, maybe I'll turn to one of my first post-it sections.
Sure.
This is like, because I bought the book Song of Spider-Man with the hopes that it was 100% about the Letterman performance of Freak Like Me. But in fact, the Freak Like Me content is pretty small, which is disappointing. But this one part did not let me down. And let me find it. So the song, you know, they got to rush this song out because the play is up and running and they got to introduce it and rehearse it and get it in there sooner than later. So it's the middle of the night. Bono is lying on a ratty couch in the middle of the recording room, improvising goblin lines over an endless groove. He was in character, a dissipated lounge lizard shaking off last night's bender and warming up for some new kicks. It's like this. He was scatting, hacking up tar, yawning, cackling into the mic. And then in the book, you get extra lyrics that are nowhere to be found in the song. And he didn't have to cover your ears, Mike, because he gets a tad body. He's not worried about it. He's just letting it flow. They'll edit it down later. But here's what comes out of Bono's mouth. Bring out the dancing girls. The crossroads of the world needs a little resurrection. It used to be really rotten around here. Now can't even buy me an erection. So it's the middle of the night. Bono's on the floor saying
hacking
that
up tar.
Shit.
Hacking up tar.
Apparently hacking up tar, which is troubling.
Preparing for his kicks. No. He's just playing the character.
Yeah, he's not really hacking up tar.
Oh, I see.
Slurring
okay.
Like he was three sheets to the wind with stain. Can you tell this was written by a Broadway book writer? It's with stained silk bathrobe bravado.
He thinks it's awesome.
He loves it. And he's like, well, he's watching an artistic process in action.
Right.
He watched him improvise the line about $65 million circus tragedy.
How did he come up with that?
I don't know. Bono's a genius.
Oh, he's
that
got a
good
spreadsheet with all the numbers on it and how much it's affecting his bottom line.
He was protected.
He's got to sell an island.
It should say, though, this musical did set the record for 1 week Broadway sales once during one of its weeks of its run at 2.9 million.
Jeez. Okay.
But its operating costs were estimated to be $1 million a week. So I think it did end up being profitable.
Okay.
Because it did. And it also ran for 2.5 years.
I think they broke even or something.
Yeah.
They would have kept running it if it was profitable.
So also, and the guy compares what Bono was doing to like Tom Waits. So there's a little bit of Tom Waits influence in
which
Green Goblin.
There's a lot of Tom Waits influence on Heath Ledger's Joker. And that's, I'm just being serious.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's, I that recently clip. Learned that too. Yeah.
If you, there's a clip of like him talking, Tom Waits being like, hey, there is Dean. And then you like, they show the clip of Heath Ledger and you're like, oh yeah, though it's the voice. It's the
and
same
the way
voice.
He kind of like smacks his lips and shakes mm-hmm. his head around. And yeah, so the little, all the great supervillains have some right. Tom Waits. But also in the demo, when they say a freak like me needs, it was the Edge. It was the Edge stacked on himself, multi-tracked. So this demo does exist, and we have to get our hands
get
it.
On it. Yeah.
But here's where it gets truly insane. It's March 17th as they're doing this. It's the middle of the night, and all of New York's most famous freaks are flooding the streets. So who should walk in into the recording session of this song but Elvis Costello? Let one more luminary. Costello is in the building while they're doing this. He's wearing a pair of devil horns, like Mr.
McFisto.
So Bono invites Elvis to Steve Lillywhite is there. They play him the track. Elvis listened intently, hardly moving until the songs were over. And after he said some very complimentary things and headed out into the night, Bono said, yeah, I heard the songs through his ears, and there's some things we need to fix. Then writer Glenn Berger goes on to say, and that's what you get with a community of artists. There's an exchange of ears. And it's all about how he's isolated, but right. he doesn't have company of freaks like Bono and Costello have with each other.
I love Costello coming in and going like, this is good. Like, they're all just like kissing each other's ass and stuff about it. This is good.
It requires a willingness to be self-critical. These guys in the devil horns had it.
This book.
Yeah, I'm sure these guys are real self-critics. I'm sure. Bono and the Edge, super self-aware still. Very hard on themselves.
Do you think Costello was like, you should have like a knife woman? You know, it'd be fun is if you had like a knife lady come out. Well,
what's scary?
Anyway, back to drinking. Bye.
He sticks his head back in. Maybe a gun. A gun woman. Guns are scarier.
It's up to you. It's your show. I don't want to be prescriptive.
See you at Sardi's.
If Costello had like written a line in this, that would be a great lore.
Yeah,
I don't
like
think
that fake story of Prince writing the Frozen. Cold didn't bother me anyway.
Yep.
This is Mike, listening to the song a million times before recording this really gives me a new appreciation of the City Walk Saga theme song.
What do you mean?
Mike's a better songwriter than Bono. Yeah. Although apparently some people were haunted by Sublime Hot Topic in Cinnabon trying to figure out
a lot of mystery in what my intention was behind writing the lyric. Was I talking about Sublime the store, or was I saying that Hot Topic was Sublime?
Sublime.
And here I'll say this now, I'm not going to tell.
Yeah.
Well,
another tool.
An artist has to be ambiguous. Who are you? I mean, you did a demo of the vocal, like Bono. You did a demo of the song before it was replaced by the Broadway caliber Zach Reno. Were you channeling anyone while singing that song? I assume Tom Waits, but besides that,
Tom Waits. I was sort of more of like a Gregorian. I was kind of getting in the place of like the Gregorian chants. That's what I was sort of thinking, primitive music.
The
I was
Celtic
sort of trying
hills,
to think.
Yes, you can feel the spirits, and it's really the before City Walk. There were the hills of Ireland,
but of course, all popular rock and roll goes back to Muddy Waters and Mississippi Delta.
Blind Willie Jefferson.
Blind Willie.
Brian Eno via Mike Post, I'll say.
Hey, great. Yes.
Yeah.
Why didn't they get Eno down to consult on this?
Eno was a big... Eno was Octung Baby, right?
He kind of played... I guess he didn't play characters. He could be a malevolent figure in certain songs.
I'm sorry, I just have to point out. So Letterman is on stage standing in front of Swiss Miss, and her knife knee pad is still spinning. It has not stopped spinning.
That's great.
You see it, you can't unsee it.
Okay. So we have established in the song that all the freaks in New York City are out tonight. All the weirdos are all around. But we need further proof of this. And so there is a roll call of each member of the Sinister Six. Perhaps we should go through them. You've got a really... I don't know. It's hard to pick a favorite line or anything, but for sure, we got a man made entirely out of mutant bees. He's kind of tossing it off. He's getting a little half-assed. And then, of course, the bee falls off.
Yeah, that would be Swarm. First appearance, Champions, number 14, July 1977. this character, I think the actual comics design of Swarm, it is just a mass of bees. The character has been... from Wikipedia, the character has been depicted as a former Nazi sympathizer and has been mainly featured as an enemy of Spider-Man. His entire body is composed of bees surrounding his skeleton. And on top of that, he has a big purple cloak. So that's one of those things like, oh, only in comics until Broadway came along.
Until somebody put a bunch of sticks on a yellow and black unitard. And,
yeah.
Wait, who's next? What's the order? Oh, the Electro.
Yeah.
I think it's the lizard.
I think it's the lizard.
He comes up the aisles.
Right, right.
And and that's legitimately impressive that an inflatable dinosaur bursts out of a scientist out of his stomach. Electro is the guy with like a torch in his hand, correct?
He's sparking a lot.
Yeah, he has like electricity. Cool spark effects, based. Which I think they kind of use similar spark effects. You know how Letterman always have those like spokes models with the metal that they would be like sparking when they would hit metal on metal? Does no one know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
He would have like just mod. I don't remember. Like they would be showcasing
something.
Was that
during the Will It Float?
If it many different times they would bring in these like women that had like metal and they would just like do these like sparking things that would, but it looks like a similar effect that Electro has going on.
I see. That's also one of the top lines of the thing is we, hey ladies, how about a human lightning bolt? You want it? You got it. why ladies?
Electro, not to be confused with Shocker, Spider-Man's other electricity themed.
I love Shocker. I'm a
nemesis.
Big Shocker fan as a kid.
The costume kind of looks like more
it
like
is
Shocker's.
Very similar.
Than Electro's.
Is Kraven next?
I think it's Kraven the Hunter.
And that's the joke. He makes a joke which seems like he's implying that because Kraven the Hunter, Jason, do you have facts on Kraven you want to read?
Sure. Kraven, real name Sergei Kravinov, a maniacal big game hunter who seeks to defeat Spider-Man to prove that he is the greatest hunter in the world. And he favors his bare hands. He does not like using guns or bow and arrows.
And Kraven's last hunt, he famously commits suicide, which is one of the most famous stories, right?
Whoa.
Yes, because he thinks he's killed Spider-Man.
Right, but he hasn't.
And won, but then he tries to replace him, and then it turns out he hasn't, so he commits suicide.
And in the show, in the Spider-Man show, he says, like, Kraven, the hunter, like, what he, I forget, I should have written down the line. It's like, he likes the animals, but maybe a little too much.
So that is about sex.
That Kraven is for sure implying that he's had sex with the whatever lion or tiger he's
his
hanging
looks
around
like
with.
The most like a Lion King on Broadway style puppet. Because he's like a big cartoonish looking man and in his costume. Yeah, here
he's
it
got
is.
A whip and leather pants.
It's a lion.
Oh,
literally roars like the
he's
lion
my
on his
favorite
chest.
Of the costumes.
He's very good. Yeah.
It's really good. And he factors into this other. We're going to direct you to another YouTube video I recently discovered in which Spider-Man and the Green Goblin put their differences aside to hold a press conference about Halloween costume safety. There is, please look this up or we'll put it in the show notes or something, that the Green Goblin, Spider-Man's not really talking, he stands off to the side, and the Green Goblin handles it. Different actor playing the Green Goblin, but he says, "Now Spider-Man and I, we've had our differences, many of which have played out on the public stage, but there's one thing that we can agree on, and that's Halloween safety." And then he like it pans around the other villains. Like, "Now my friends here are dressed very outlandishly, but they make sure to have maximum visibility at night." And these sad reporters have to be there outside the theater covering this non-event. It's so funny. And then
anyway, I'm a fantastic supervillain, but I do want to say Blue Lives Matter.
You know, these guys. They're out on the
every day,
putting their lives on the line.
And you know, stop and frisk works. It's a word we wouldn't have used it for so long if it had worked.
Come on, Mayor de Blasio.
Come on.
Well, it was 2011, so.
Yes, they all turn their.
I'll replace you next election. He all, and then it goes to like a very bland police officer. or just reading facts about, like, do not wear all black costumes, make sure you have reflective materials on your, and during that, Kraven the Hunter leans in behind him and kind of like cranes his head and smiles as these dull facts about safety are listed. It's the funny, these villains are truly left with like, well, the only thing I can do is writhe around mm-hmm. and look evil, and so what do they do when we're talking about like kids don't make sure that candy's wrapped, make sure it got no needles in there. They're at a loss.
If you're going as cops and robbers or cowboys, make sure there's an orange cap on the end of your toy costume pistol.
Oh, you be too careful
dead.
These days.
You are dead. You are smoked, son.
So that's a great video. Check that out. Kraven the Hunter, the all-star of that one. Mm-hmm. Who else? No, now we got. I don't remember his name.
Carnage.
Cletus Cassidy. Jason, you want to give us some the symbiote?
Carnage is interesting to me because the original idea was that the writer David is it Michelin? David Michelin?
Oh yeah, I don't know.
He wrote a lot of Spider-Man comics. He was going to kill off Venom. He wanted to kill off Venom.
Big mistake
because he was too popular, too successful, and management was like, well, we can't kill him off. And eventually the storyline became, we'll kill off Kraven. Mm-hmm. But similarly, he could not make Venom. They needed someone even more extreme than Venom. Mm-hmm. So they made Carnage, a similar symbiote-based Spider-Man enemy, but Cletus Cassidy is a fucking psychopath. Mm-hmm. Venom has a moral compass, though it's twisted, yeah. He's got a moral compass, but Carnage is just fucking crazy, man.
He's a very 90s character. I mean, Venom is a 90s character, but Carnage is 90s, baby. Like, extreme and violent. And
Venom created at the end of the 80s, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And ahead of the... Just like Cable. And then just became... When the 90s just ran with these extreme characters, you end up with...
Carnage.
The extreme nature of Carnage is presented in the Letterman performance is he killed his grandmother and tortured his mother's dog. My kind of guy. Carnage. Shout out Carnage.
That's the first time also he's talked about actually killing.
That's pretty thrown away. Yeah, these are literal murderers. Don't forget. Right.
It's pretty innocent up until that. Mm-hmm. Up until he says, "We got a guy in the team who killed someone," and he's.
Where does Carnage has a grandmother?
I honestly don't. Well, the history of Carnage is a little cloudy to me. Yeah. I assume he killed some person in his family. He was just like a really crazy hillbilly character.
I think the timing works out where when he would have been created and started in the comics lines up with Silence of the Lambs being a big hit movie. Mm. So it's kind of like, oh, it's like Venom meets Hannibal Lecter. Because like all the early Carnage storylines were like, this guy's so crazy. He'll just straight up murder people in cold blood. Like any nuance or any like, well, he's tortured because of this reason. Like Dr. Octopus in the second Spider-Man movie. He's tortured because he's trying to prove this scientific formula but then he's haunted by his wife dying in the process. That's gone. Carnage is just a straight up psychopath.
Mm-hmm. But there's something about it being his grandmother that just makes it feel like, you know, he
told his teacher to suck eggs. That would seem like it would be more appropriate for what had come before in the song.
Yeah. That there's no reference made. It's just, we're going to have a freaky party.
Yeah.
Anyway, he killed his grandmother. He was, you know, they stacked the jury, so he got off. It wasn't totally clean. I think they bought that election and they had some sway with the DA. But anyway, he's out on the street.
I've got some thoughts on partisan judges.
And then you got Swiss Miss, the most tossed off of all. And oh, wait, one more. There you go. Okay,
Swiss
we gotta
Miss,
keep
there
singing.
You go.
There's a female also. Okay, bye.
That's kind of I forget the character's name in the Spider-Man ride in Florida.
Scream, referencing?
Yes. There's
a yellow Venom symbiote.
Yeah, one of the symbiote spinoffs, and it made it sound like, well, we gotta have a girl bad guy. Like, in both of these, it does feel so tossed off.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't go Black Cat or, like, I mean, she's like a tweener, but she could be a bad guy, you know? She doesn't have, she could be in this universe.
A bit of an anti-hero.
Black Cat, she's good sometimes. Sometimes she's bad. We don't know. Black Cat, there you go.
Very young, has a streak, has a lot of white hair.
Think she's like Catwoman? She is.
Her biggest crime is being a ripoff artist. Intellectual property theft.
Oh, Black Cat.
So that all is so delightful. He's just the most theme parky villain. He's so much like the genie. He's like Bugsy. He's like exactly like Bugsy.
Yes, that's true. He is a lot like Bugsy.
Just a devil. But he's mean, but he's also cheeky. I think he's kind of cute.
I am so upset this isn't still running on Broadway. There was a rumor it was going to be running and they were going to move it to Vegas, which is the perfect place
this
for
is
it.
This is 100% Vegas.
And they never like get the funding to move everything, but...
I'm gonna throw a pitch your way. Here's a plus it up.
I have a pitch too, but yeah, go for it.
Okay. I'm worried. I'm saying your pitch.
No, there's not, I don't think there is. I think it's a different.
I think that this is the merger I want to make happen between a couple like not 100% successful musicals, but I think you do this pair up and it's perfect. The Jimmy Buffett musical Escape from Margaritaville proceeds as it did, whatever the hell happened in that show, but right. Halfway through,
well, what's this, a little beach party? Looks like y'all are getting laid, huh? Look, I make jokes. Maybe I need to rain on your little sunny parade.
And like the Green Goblin as a threat within Escape from Margaritaville would form the greatest musical ever achieved.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, there's no reason not to do that. Just to have a main character of the Margaritaville musical, Tully Mars.
You need some help, Tully Mars? Spider-Man! Thank God you're here.
The actor playing Tully Mars has broken both legs.
But the multiple Tully Marses swinging in from the balconies. Tully and Spider-Man swing. Yeah.
Now that's a problem because those swings have to be precisely timed and choreographed. And Tully Mars ain't never worn a watch. He's on his own time.
He's on island time, obviously.
And in the end of the show, like the Green Goblin's getting threatened, and he talked to the mayor, and he's gonna cancel summer.
Then
he sees them all drinking margaritas, and he's like, "Wait a minute, drinks can be green. Toss one of those my way, brother." And then they all cheers and party together.
Uh huh. And then they sing like a mashup of Margaritaville and Boy Falls from the Sky.
I'm into that.
Wasted away again, Margaritaville.
Yeah, no, that's not what I was going to pitch.
And the Julie Taymor Lost Shaker of Salt, that's a living creature with
That's great.
children crying at the appearance of the salt shaker.
Certainly the cheeseburger is also an anthropomorphic cheeseburger in paradise.
He's got a big floppy cheese tongue lapping around.
Mm-hmm. The volcano would be real, or it would be like that volcano from the Pixar short who's sad.
Oh yeah, sure.
Lava.
Why did they use actual lava? Julie Taymor insisted on real lava. The cast, all their feet got singed. They'll never walk again.
Oh god, the safety strap wasn't fully on their harness and then they stepped in lava. That's a real insult to insult. No injury to injury. No insults at all.
Man,
do you have another pitch?
My pitch was honestly not as good. My pitch was just that I want to see Bono on the Edge. It's about time, I think, for them to tackle another superhero property, because we had Batman Forever, then we had Spider-Man. I think it's time for them to do another big famous superhero, and I'm open to pitches on this, but I mean, like, there needs to be like an Iron Man musical written by Bono and the Edge or something.
Sure.
A big superhero, and get their take. Like, what is, when Bono and the Edge want to write a song where the the Mandarin is the villain. What kind of song are we going to get?
I'm the freaky little Mandarin.
I know nothing else about the Mandarin, but that's, I mean, the song.
For sure, like harpsichord, like Asian-inspired influences, and like Bono certainly getting into a problematic character headspace before he's doing the lyrics for the Mandarin. Mm-hmm. Think
we're the freaky fantastic four.
Or at the very least, an original IP of all U2 characters from the tours as its own musical superhero kind of a mashup thing.
Yes. Wait, who will take us through some other characters?
Well, Bono is like the pop tour. Bono is like the boxer, and he's got like a big like robe on, and like it's Bono is usually the interesting character on the show.
Well,
so
can I pitch where it would take place?
Oh, please go for it.
Joshua Tree National Park.
No, that's a different era.
I just mean a setting.
Yeah, you could combine them. Yeah. All right, fine. It's a jukebox musical.
Wait, your U2 musical is just like three albums worth? It's not even addressing all of it?
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite
it?
U2 stuff is all the nonsense with the characters and
stuff.
And
people
stuff.
Don't like.
The stuff that people like Achtung Baby, but people get a little bit weird about the Mr. Mephisto stuff.
Well,
for some reason.
You've also, of course, got if it's multiple Bono villains and characters meeting, you got to get Dr. Robert, the character he played in Julie Taymor's film Across the
right.
Universe.
From the Beatles song.
Uh-huh. That's why this all happened. It actually started with Bono and the Edge, not Julie Taymor. And they had one condition. The condition is Julie. That's so they caused that. They created uh-huh. this monster
was
and then
this
fired
after
the monster.
Across the Universe?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
So you time. Just saw how she just did not understand the Beatles, and they're like, what if she could misunderstand Spider-Man too?
and rap music in general, and Tom Waits.
The other characters, I forget, the other characters on the Pop Mart tour other than Mr. Mephisto were Bono's the Fly character when he had his giant glasses, mm-hmm. and then Mirror Ball Man.
Barf. I was looking at some articles about Mr. Mephisto. I didn't really have time to do the full research I would have liked to. And I don't know how much I believe this, but according to U2songs.com, Joel Schumacher, the director of Batman Forever, had met with Bono to discuss an on-screen role. Initially, it was thought that Bono would play a villain, but there were already two evil characters in the film already. So instead, Schumacher considered having Bono perform a song in costume as Mephisto. Mephisto is almost
in
the movie.
I believe that.
Yeah, I don't know why I wouldn't.
Like,
that's a crazy movie.
Coolio was in the second, and it was in Batman and Robin, I believe. Like, there are little weird cameos, right. And then there's, like, decent, I don't know, Drew Barrymore is in, like, a tiny role. Like, there are people that are put in the movie as is, and he did a song on the soundtrack, so it makes sense that, like, he met with him. And it makes sense Joel Schumacher would have been like, I like Mr. Mephisto.
Yes. This feels like a good time to bring this up. So, I don't know if you guys had anything like this in your middle school music classes, but I sure did, and it's still confusing to me to this day. So we would get the music teachers would get these magazines, like glossy magazines that every student got a copy, and for a couple weeks at least, we would analyze a popular song using things we had learned in music classes. And the one year it was Kiss from a Rose. Kiss by a Rose?
Kiss from a Rose.
Kiss from a Rose. And the next year it was I Believe I Can Fly.
Whoa.
So
both of the big Warner Brothers R&B crossover.
Yeah, so maybe that magazine, I mean, I'm sure that magazine was funded by a record label, probably Warner Brothers Records. We only did that, maybe it's just the same teacher, but like I never did that again.
Like a curriculum passed out on a professional level.
Yes, like that looked in like a magazine that looks like, you know, a thin floppy Rolling Stone kind of thing.
Which really, maybe that gave you a thirst for like music and song and lyric analysis that led to this very podcast today. Mm. Like, I'd like to get that booklet now and say, okay, so let's move on to line three. I'm a rolling baby, rolling in the green, but I'm unique, a freak. Now, what do you make of that? I love Batman Forever. I hope we keep doing a lot of Batman Forever talk and in general. We're missing a big component to what makes this video great, which is that at the end we get to see the real time reaction of wonderfully cantankerous David Letterman. Watching him, so he comes out and is kind of that bemused mode, like, ho, ho, oh, boy. hey, and he makes this very odd, lame joke. It's like a party at my mom's house. And is kind of, and then gets surrounded by all the freaks. And that, it's just priceless. It's wonderful. And then at the very, very end, the YouTube video cuts off in a wonderful way where with half a second to go, Electro lights up a flame and he's taken his mask off by that point. So he's just this enthusiastic dude like, hey, and it's so wonderful. He barely gets it in there.
Yeah.
A big open flame next to David Letterman. And what I think is that any other host, this is not as funny. Like that this is a performance being done in the like in the home of the meanest man who doesn't like anything.
Does he? Yeah, because I feel like I don't remember what the verdict was on this. Usually, does Letterman usually like the musical performances that were on the show or not? No, he was usually checked out.
No way.
Yeah. He likes the Foo Fighters, and he likes maybe like
Springsteen.
Springsteen, like the Black Keys, probably. When, like, I think he likes
Superchunk or New Pornographers would play. He'd be like, hey, that's
might,
great.
I think he might like some of that, okay. But I think
like Beastie Boys. I think they seem to have fun with the Letterman.
He famously, I think, is an old crank and doesn't like most things.
Yeah.
So
and
yeah,
that's the thing that today this performance is done for Jimmy Fallon or James Corden, and they come out after and like, oh my god, that was fantastic. Fantastic. They eat it up. They like suck up like it's the best thing I've ever seen. That's how it's done, baby. That kind of, and I miss so much.
Chainsmokers. They
give it, yeah, like if you're saying give it 100%, they will give the reaction to it 100%.
The cast of Spider-Man, turn off the talk, everybody. That's my Jimmy Fallon impression I always do. Everything he always says, everybody. Apparently
he does that
bothers
weird
no one but affect. Me.
No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
The only funnier version of this would be if they were doing this the performance on Ed Sullivan.
Now, ladies and gentlemen,
and like he had to kind of like walk around and just like not know what to make of it, and like he wouldn't be able to sell that. He was never an excitable man, so like that would be an equivalent. But yeah, no newer host would like show you what he felt.
Yeah, would immediately sell out the piece. And I've got one more little thing, which is that, as you said, Jason, there was previously a Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark performance, and that was the star Reeve Carney performing the big ballad Rise Above. And that's my absolute favorite part of the book Song of Spider-Man.
That, I think, is the most, listening to a handful of songs from the musical, that seems the most Broadway-y. Of the songs, I think.
Sure, yeah. It's the big, soaring, moving.
Yeah.
Actually, I was wrong. The singer is TV Carpio, who plays Arachne. And and this gives you if you're interested in reading Song of Spider-Man, this is a real like window into the tone of the book. But this is like, he's at the writer is absolutely at wit's end. He owes incredible changes, like massive overhauls of this play that's falling apart and hurting people. And right at that very moment, he's alone. He's removed from his family. They literally live somewhere else. He hasn't seen his child in months because he's putting together A Freak Like Me Needs Company. And he's alone in his New York apartment. It's cold. He's shivering, and he turns on the TV, and his very work, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, comes on, and the lyrics, your strength will be a vision beyond visibility, and the the lyrics, your strength will be a vision beyond visibility, and the gift I've woven for you will give you new eyes to see that you can rise above yourself. Then, and I let out a scream, loud, ragged, and long, until the walls echoed and my throat hurt. I felt like throwing up. I felt like slamming my hand against a wall until I had shattered some bones. But I didn't. I made myself some coffee. the most, and I, what wow. I love about that is that for all, this is a man having a melt. He's abandoned his yeah. family. He's having an absolute meltdown alone, just all like curled up in the ball of the floor. And a woman on TV dressed as a spider lady is singing, you've got to rise above. And he goes, he's like scream. He's having a meltdown like from a movie to himself, from a fucking Spider-Man performance of a theme on a, of a, it's a theme park show. This is so rich. These are adults acting like this and doing this.
And then he made himself a cup of coffee, and then he tossed in like Vanity Fair celebrity profile first paragraph details of like Anna Kendrick walked into Le Mille and ordered yeah. her latte, and it's like, we don't, these profile, like, stop telling us what everyone's, what actually, I kind of know what I like, it's to know
the, how people, else do you get to know a character, you, or learn how they drink their coffee, what they order for breakfast, how they shave,
they exchange money for goods and services just like me.
It's a regular, it's an average temperature day in Los Angeles, and Mia Cabrera is sipping on a cup of water to soothe her voice, apparently, from a big performance the night before. Yeah, you're absolutely right. What are these? Why do articles need to pad out with this graph? Yeah.
Steve Bannon ordered another cup of slop as he walked into the garbage dump that he called a home.
He ate directly with his mouth, yeah. His face in.
Every item truck. Made of corrugated iron that had rusted.
He had a 10-gallon drum of bleach to pour into a hot tub.
But nothing would clean him of his sins.
Oh, there he is, the Green Goblin.
We've got a perfect there final frame. His wonderful smile. I mean, it shows you how much, I think we've all been waiting probably for years to talk about this at length, and there's so much there.
And there's more. We'll get to more.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll
we'll
do the whole Mr. Mephisto.
Mike saw the whole show, so we can do an episode on both versions of the show, because they were different the rewrites.
Oh, yeah. We'll find.
After the previews closed.
Yeah. So you've got YouTube homework to do if you have watched them talking about Halloween costumes. Watch everything you can get your hands on, because this thing, I guess it all sounds like shit talk or something, but truly, this thing makes me so happy. Mm-hmm. It's cheered me up. If I'm in a bad mood, I could put this on and I smile. I thank everyone involved for doing this wonderful piece of television.
I agree.
It's made me so happy for so many years.
And I thank both of you for making me re-look at this with a theme park lens, where, yes, it's perfect. With a Broadway lens or a comic book lens, it is a puzzle you will never be able to solve.
But if you think, it's theme park entertainment out in the world.
A
villain broke into the Letterman show. I love it. I wish things like that happened all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks everybody. It's so great. Well, you survived Podcast the Ride, the Second Gate, one of the most enthusiastic episodes you're ever going to hear. Tell us more bullshit that you want to hear us talk about at length by emailing us at podcasttheride@gmail.com, and subscribe to our regular stuff on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And stay weird.
Most of all, keep it freaky.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Mike Carlson, Jason Sheridan, Scott Gardner, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.